What's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 97. We're coming up on that triple digit number. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
This is Melissa.
We hope you all had a good Thanksgiving, those of you who celebrated it this weekend as opposed to, you know, in October.
What?
That was just for you, Ethan. I thought you'd appreciate that.
And everyone else is celebrating, what is it, Mustache Week? Mustache Month?
No Shave.
No Shave November.
No Shave November. Cool.
Yeah. I didn't even know I was celebrating. Okay. I have no idea. All right, let's go ahead and talk about what we watched this week. Barry, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. All right. Let's see. I saw Year One, which is kind of one of those real middle-of-the-road movies. It's funny, but it's not funny enough. Yeah, it just really wasn't much to it. It really was like a 90-minute Saturday Night Live skit. Michael Cera is the best thing about the movie, but it really wasn't that good. Oliver Platt plays this flaming drag queen, and even he wasn't enough to make it worse. I don't know. It just really wasn't much to it. Saw The Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, which is definitely a slight improvement over the original.
Slight improvement, so it's from a 0 to a 1.
You know, I gave it a 1.5 star rating, so that's actually about right, yeah. Julie Benz, who played the earnest missionary in Rambo, she plays something of a villainess in this one, and she's the best thing about it. She gives like a high camp, very sexy, really crazy performance. Her character is the fill-in for Willem Dafoe, so she kind of makes up for the lack of Dafoe in the movie.
So does she cross-dress as a man then? Or?
She doesn't need to.
Okay.
She cross-dresses as other things. It's a crazy performance, but I got to say, she, for me, made the movie worthwhile. Otherwise, it really was more the same. The dialogue is still terrible. Some of the performances, not all, but some of the performances were really bad. And mostly it was just the dialogue was just so awful. But the action was better. Billy Connolly is still good. Peter Fonda was the bad guy. I'm trying to think who else was in it. There was some good things about it, and I definitely walked away liking it more than the first one. And they set it up for a sequel that I thought the setup was really, really good at the end. The movie really finds its footing in the last act, but it's really for fans only. If you hated the first one, you'll hate this one.
And Ebert even gave it like a 1-star rating, but he said the cinematography was very much improved.
Yes, from the first one. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, the cinematography was improved, the action scenes were improved, the music was improved. But it's still incredibly homophobic, racist, misogynist, highly profane, and just really, it's very, very post-Tarantino. It feels like a movie made in 1999, not now.
Interesting.
So, saw An Education with Carey Mulligan, the one that's gotten a lot of good reviews. It's a good film. I wasn't crazy about it, but it is a good movie. I don't think it went deep enough, because the whole thing is about this girl being seduced by this guy who's clearly bad news. And this is in 1961. This is before the women's rights movement. This is before, you know, the counterculture change. So this is still like a girl who's in the innocence of the 50s. And she gets seduced by this man, a much older man, played by Peter Sarsgaard. And the problem with it is that once things go bad, and you know that eventually they are going to go bad, the movie is still so light and fluffy. And it has a really pat, really rushed ending. So I didn't feel like this journey of this young girl was really represented completely well. But all the acting was great. She's terrific in it. Rosamund Pike, who was a Bond girl a few years back, she's good in it. Emma Thompson, good cast. And then I saw Surrogates last night. Great movie. What a surprise. What a surprise.
Is that at the Chief Theater now?
Yeah, it's at the Chief Theater. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And you know what's nice? It was in the real theater for so briefly. The Chief Theater quality is great. Like this, it was
the
better
print
than
still looks great.
It was better than when we saw Parnassus. Yeah, the picture and the sound quality was fantastic.
Oh, you went there.
I did. It's... you know, it's nothing to get excited about. It's not Blade Runner, but it's not The Sixth Day either. Like, it's kind of right in the middle. Like, it's a movie of ideas, and it really does. I mean, I thought this is great. This is totally talking to me because, you know, I love the internet, but I'm one of these people who think that we're just way, way, way too dependent on the internet. And the movie's basically about that fear of, like, we're way too overly dependent on technology and what would happen if that was pulled away from us. It has an ending that reminded me of the ending of Escape from L.A., that really ballsy last scene of Escape from L.A.
Really?
It's like that.
Okay.
Willis is in excellent form. It takes its crazy idea and goes as far as it can. It's not really an action movie, even though it has action sequences. There is a big action scene towards the end of the movie where the director, Jonathan Mostow, you know, T3, mm-hmm. where you could feel him kind of trying to top his big highway crash scene in T3. Like, he's trying to top it, and it's not necessary. It's a little silly. But beyond that, I got to say, I think this is one of the most underrated movies of the year. I was very surprised, and like Jules and I have not been able to stop thinking about it.
Very cool.
That's it for me.
That's it? Cool. All right. Melissa, do you want to go next?
Sure. I saw Big Fish. I'd never seen that before.
What'd you think?
At first, there was something I just really didn't like about it because it was so kind of fantastical and all the stories were unreal. But then I bought into it. And yeah, and then the ending, like, I just, like, cried. I just loved it. So, and what's kind of ironic is I watched this the day before Thanksgiving or maybe 2 days before. And in the middle of dinner, my great aunt just, like, stops to tell us this story that did not happen. And about halfway through, my dad's cousin, her son, was like, this never happened. I don't know what she is talking about. And I mean, she's like maybe 78 or something. I don't know if she was like delusional about it or what the deal was, but it just kind of made me think, because you know how some old people do that and kind of stretch the truth, or she had elements of some things that were true, but like the whole thing together was just a fabrication. And it was like, I don't know. It was interesting that that happened to me this week, and I saw that. But the way Big Fish puts it together is so much more endearing, and the way that he wanted to get close to his father, and yeah. Just, yeah, that was great. I should have seen that a lot sooner. But
see, I'm not gushing right now, because, and I'm kind of proud of myself for keeping myself in check a little bit.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, it's appreciate my favorite Burton film by far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yay. Wow. I almost want to like put that on a loop. My favorite Burton movie. Dave said that.
Yes. And it's not because I think he sucks. It's just that that's just a really good movie. Yeah,
it is.
I also saw Closer with Natalie Portman. And oh my gosh, like, not that I didn't like her before, but this just completely opens up my eyes to her as an actress and her abilities. And I just thought the cast was great and they all worked well together. And I kind of was just confused at the end, though. It was like, wait, like, I want to see all that again, because the relationship between Julia Roberts and Ewan McGregor, you kind of don't know about the whole movie, but then they tell you, you know, this is what's been going on.
You mean Clive
Owen?
Us.
No.
Is Ewan McGregor in that?
Yeah, or not Ewan McGregor. He's in Big Fish. Jude Law.
Jude Law.
Sorry. They look kind of alike.
They do.
I'm sorry. The relationship between Julia Roberts and Jude Law, I don't want to give anything away, but they don't really ever explicate that in the movie, like, with anything that you can physically see, but you know what's going on between them. And so, no, it'd just be good to watch it again, I think, knowing what I know now about it. So, I don't know. That was not what I was expecting at all, either. So,
it's a rough movie. It's kind of nasty.
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked it, though, because even though it's kind of gritty, I like that. And then right after that, I watched V for Vendetta.
Oh, wow.
And because I was like, why not? I'm in the mood. But I actually didn't really pay close enough attention to that, because I know that there's all kinds of underlying subtext. And that's a long movie. I kind of started it a little late, so I need to watch that again, too. But I mean, I loved the ending of that. And I don't know. I don't have much else to say about it, because I really was preoccupied with other stuff and I was playing with the dog and whatever, so I should watch that again.
So you love that the masked man destroys Parliament?
Well,
or?
No, but I yes. The relationship that
that he has with Portman's character,
that was very interesting, because you would think that she would be resentful and angry, but it's the only thing that she really has to hold on to. And I don't know, I liked it. And then I showed my friend Ink, and that was only the second time I've watched it. And even though that movie makes perfect sense when you watch it the first time, it made so much more sense, and all the parallels just really come together the second time you watch it. And I was just like completely blown away again. And
great.
I'm so glad my friend liked it too, because I'm always so apprehensive. Like, I know exactly how you feel, Dave. It's like, oh, I just love this, talk it up. And then it's like, wait, what if they hate this? What if this is a really bad idea? But he just loved it, so.
Cool.
I can't wait to watch that over and over again.
Cool. Nice.
That's all.
Okay. All right, Ethan, why don't you go ahead and go next? What did you watch this week?
I finally saw Lars and the Real Girl.
Ah, Julia's one of her favorite movies.
Yeah, it's a really, really strong film. And, The thing I'd heard was a comedy, but I really found it to be a complete straight-faced drama, and I honestly like that about it. I like that it took such a serious look at those issues, and I think it's something that, in a weird way, this is going to sound weird, it's something everyone can kind of relate to.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to the extent of having a real-life doll, but the way a lot of people we kind of have these emotional investments in things that are like inanimate objects. Like there's a scene in the movie where Lars, like his coworker, has like these action figures that his love interest keeps taking from him.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a good kind of a little subtle thing in the movie about how everyone is like that. Everyone has their own emotional problems, and they do it by latching on to things like that. And yeah, I thought it was quite good.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. It's a favorite of mine too.
I in honor of Fantastic Mr. Fox, I revisited The Life Aquatic.
Oh, very good.
I hadn't seen it since it came out in the theater, and I know this movie at the time, it received a lot of criticism for kind of just being people kind of getting just sick of Wes Anderson. It's saying it's kind of meandering, and it's him and his kind of dollhouse quality and such. But honestly, how I just view this movie, I just see it as a comedy, and it's just a very funny movie, and it's just very entertaining. I don't, obviously, towards the end, there's a certain thing where it's obviously going for some deep emotional resonance, and maybe it's somewhat of a mistake, but I think in the end, the movie it comes together, and it's very good.
I wholly agree. I think it's one of his best movies. The one that I felt was kind of him, my least favorite of his movies is Darjeeling Limited. Did you like that one?
I did.
Okay, man, just curious. Because for me, that was the one where I thought, you know, maybe getting a little pretentious. But no, I love The Life Aquatic.
Yeah, I love any time when the pirates take over their ship, or when they went to rescue Goldblum. Like, mm-hmm. those two sequences are just so funny. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, great film.
I saw John Cassavetes' first film, Shadows.
Oh, wow.
Which, I have to say, it's pretty insane that this was a movie, like an American movie made in the 1950s. Like, pretty insane. Like, just the things in this movie, the issues it deals with and the filmmaking techniques and how kind of raw and unpolished it was. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, his stuff is painful, but man, just like you're saying, not only ahead of its time, but so groundbreaking. Yeah, it's a...
Well, it's interesting, too. Because it's like, it's pretty short. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. And all those other movies are like 2.5 hours mm-hmm. and such. But I guess, too, because he was just, everything was improvised. You're only so limited. So, yeah. I saw Pedro Almodovar's Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I really liked, but I need to see it again because I just feel like a lot of it went over my head. So...
That's a great film. Great. Almodovar, he's one of these guys. I'm starting to go back and kind of discover him for the first time myself. Really quick as a trivia, I love to bring this up because one of my colleagues at UCCS told me this. Turns out the movie Soap Dish, remember that? Robert Downey Jr. and Whoopi Goldberg. Did you ever see that?
I've heard of it.
Okay, well, like that movie was designed to be a remake, an Americanized remake of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. And apparently Paramount Pictures couldn't get the rights. But the film is unofficially a remake of that film, and it has like the same kind of like comic energy to it. So it's like, it's weird if you watch the two back to back, because you'll see that Soap Dish was really trying to be an Americanized version of Women on the Verge, although it's nowhere near as good.
Mm. Interesting. And finally, I watched this year's big Oscar breakout, Precious.
Oh.
I liked it, and I know you guys were talking when you were talking about like last week, right?
Yeah.
You were saying talking kind of some of the directorial choices, and I agree a lot of them were either just very bizarre or flat out bad. But
yeah.
When the movie ended, I kind of appreciated the audacity of it because it was so like. I think if the movie was just, if you took out all that stuff, it'd be like such just mundane misery porn. But just the bizarreness of it kind of gives it this weird energy. Again, like not entirely successful. I think particularly everything before she went to the school was just pretty, kind of cringe inducing because it seemed like it was just artistic flourish after artistic flourish. But once she got to the school, I felt the movie calmed down a bit and became very engaging, and I liked it overall. It wouldn't be in my top 10, but it's a very strong film. And though, wasn't it something you guys said last week? You said you thought it had no payoff, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I completely disagree with that. Completely.
I can understand that. Go ahead and make your point, then I'll tell you why I can understand that.
Okay, because don't you think the payoff was her growing as a person? And I guess I'll kind of have to get into spoilers at the end, but her spoilers for Precious. But at the end, she tells off her mom. She's like, "I'm not going to be like you." And she goes with their two kids, and she's going to start a new life, and she's a new person, and she's learned to, you know, express herself and be happy and such. And that's just how I saw it. But
and I like that portion of it. It's the part after that where she just kind of walks off. You're like, what kind of life is she walking into?
What are her options? Yeah, I mean, I think she's still screwed.
Yeah.
What the heck is she going to do?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of what I like. I think it was at a point where it was ambiguous enough where it wasn't just kind of syrupy feel-good ending, but it was enough of kind of – it was hopeful enough, I guess, is what I'd say.
Yeah.
And where I can see where that would be okay for some people is ever so briefly bringing back the documentary Still Bill, which won the audience award for best documentary at the Stars Denver Film Fest. So congrats to them for that.
Yeah.
But there's a point where Bill Withers is talking to his kids. They're like, "We want to make it big." He's like, "You want to make it to wonderful? You work at it. You work on getting to wonderful. But once you get to all right, stop and look around, because sometimes all right is as good as it's going to get." And I could kind of see it kind of hinting at that, but again, it was ambiguous enough. It didn't really even give you that much, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know, Ethan. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, because, I mean, what's the alternative? She's in a subway and starts singing Jai Ho. I mean, you know, I don't know. But, you know, so I know exactly what you're saying. Like, they could have really gone like 10 months later, and now I'm working now I own a Dairy Queen and Mongol and my new child. They're so happy, and wow, thank you.
And I'm
Mariah
still stealing
Carey.
Chicken.
Yeah, she's still swiping chicken. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're, I don't know. Like, I totally know what you're saying, because, like, they could have gone a cheesy route, and maybe in the ambiguity, it does end with the self that, you know, you're right, that it ends with a sense of, like, there's hope there. But for me, it's just, I just still felt like, God, what is she going to do? I'm glad that she has that emotional catharsis, but I still felt like, who is going to help this girl? So,
yeah.
Yeah,
but, you know, again, I don't think it's an awful film. It's just, you know, it's like you said, Ethan, it's not in my top 10 by a long shot.
It's a good film, though. I like it.
What else did you watch? Or was that it?
That was it.
All right. Before I get to mine, I want to give Melissa a chance to chime in on the stuff she saw at Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't even get into that.
Because I just remembered that, too.
Yeah.
Well, did you talk about Youth in Revolt?
We did briefly, but give us your take on it.
I just loved it. I'm so tired of hearing everyone say that it was pretentious. It was hilarious. The whole audience was just, you couldn't even hear the movie anymore because people were laughing so much. And we talked briefly about Michael Cera's kind of comfort zone and how he always seems to be playing the same character ever since Arrested Development days. But I feel like Francois, his alter ego, really did kind of push him to be something that you haven't seen from him before, and I really appreciated that. And it was a love story, and it had the impossible, and it wasn't too long, and just so many, it was creative, like all the sequences where they use claymation or whatever that was interesting, and just, it was kind of artsy, but in a jokingly, like, this is just going to be flat out hilarious way. So I loved it. I can't wait to see that again too.
Very cool.
And then Up in the Air, I don't know how I feel about it, because just the theme and the tone of the movie was like, oh my God, this is so real. This is what society is like. People just want to be alone, but we really need people to function. And when your family and your friends judge you because you don't want to function with those people, it just turns into this big, ugly thing. And even though I think that part of Up in the Air was way too Hollywood and didn't really go in depth enough with that idea, at least it explored that idea. And I think that's a really big theme in society today that people don't really address, is how everyone's expected to be in a relationship, but it never ever works out, and what you have to do to deal with it for yourself. Just how, you know, George Clooney's character would much rather live out of a suitcase than have to come home to a wife and kids. I mean, that seemed to be his worst nightmare. But then, and then it's the same old story with every guy you run into. It's like, okay, fine, I'll give in. And then you can't get the girl you want, or it all falls to pieces. So parts of it I could really identify with, I guess, even if I haven't really had to, I've never had to deal with any of those issues, but it just something about it was like, this is so real. But then there was just too much Hollywood smudged all over it still. And, I don't know, the wedding scene with his sister, it all kind of made me sad. Like when she shows him her ring and it's like this piece of crap little puny thing he picked it out himself. It was like this horrible ring. I was like, oh, just there. I guess there were just a lot of realizations for me. And I don't understand why this movie is coming out on Christmas Day. It's like, I mean, I actually think I'm going to maybe go see this on Christmas Day. But then I thought about it and I was like, do I really want to be all depressed about this again on Christmas? No. Mm. But...
Oscar!
But...
So it is a downer then?
I think...
To an extent, I think part of it is absolutely.
Yeah. The general tone of the... If you're going to absorb the underlying message of this movie, it's not going to make you happy unless you're content with society not being able to function together.
Well, you got me there. Yeah. Because I've heard it described as a love story.
It is, but it doesn't
really... It is, but it isn't.
...work out for any... And yeah, and it's not, really. Hmm. It's more...
You do have the Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life attempt at an ending, and we don't get that payoff, and I'm very glad that it didn't.
Yeah, I am too, because it was ambiguous. The ending was ambiguous, but... And it kind of left you with, well, you don't really know what he's going to do now.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Instead of like, oh, screw this, I'm going to go, you know, live out of a suitcase again and not function with people. Or, oh, I'm going to go get the girl and marry her and all this stuff. Like, it didn't go either way. But I kind of don't know which way it went. And I was okay with that.
Cool.
So.
So best thing Clooney's ever done?
No, I mean, he plays...
That's what they're saying.
He's good. Don't get me wrong.
I'm just asking. I don't know.
Yeah. He just seems... And I was telling you about this, too. He just seems to play the same guy over and over again. He's just this completely charismatic, I can get anything I want, no matter what it is. I'm so smooth. I'm so good-looking, no matter what age I am. It's just getting kind of old. But, I mean, not that he... It was good, but...
Like, 95% of movie stars play the same character in every movie.
That's true. His just seemed to kind of reek in this one.
Dang. All right.
But I did... It's just... I guess I liked the idea, but the way the idea makes me feel, I don't like. So I'm debating what I want to do with that feeling.
Okay. No, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very honest.
I guess the people who have described it as a feel-good movie are kind of...
I think they should.
They were on mind-altering substances when they saw that movie.
They make it sound like the most fun movie coming out. So yeah, like
it's fun.
Jason Reitman, the director of Juno.
There was so many funny things, but what I told you and what you noticed, Dave, was all the I laughed at very few of the things that the rest of the audience were laughing at, but I was not laughing at anything that was funny, and I think it was just because I got a little bitter at the at the idea of what kind of man George Clooney was in this movie. So
interesting.
That's the women's perspective for you.
Cool.
And then do you want to talk about Dr. Parnassus or not really?
Well, did you not see Pollywood or?
No.
Okay. We just went on. She just came up with me on that Sunday.
Oh, I got you. Gotcha.
Well, did you talk about that?
Yeah. Again? Yeah. We talked in detail about the issues with the film.
Yeah.
With
whatever.
The projection.
That's okay. That's okay. There were issues. The one thing that I remember is the first, well, I was maybe assuming that Heath Ledger was going to be in disguise, or I wasn't going to be able to recognize him right away. So I was like, oh my God, where is he? I was like so excited to see. And the first shot that you see him in, I like almost like started crying. I was like, whoa, that was a little heavy.
Yeah,
for
that's
me.
A little jarring.
You know, it's funny because people were talking in the Dark Knight. I forgot to bring this up last week. You know, it's going to be so disturbing to see Heath Ledger in a body bag. Wait till you see Dr. Parnassus. That's all I gotta say.
This reminds me of when The Crow came out. And the first time you see Brandon Lee is when he's like digging himself out of his own grave, you know, which is so morbid. It's the same thing in this film.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead. That's okay. But yeah, it's very ironic. And it's definitely unfortunate that he did not get to finish this, because it would have been very interesting to see what the original sequence of the film was going to be. Who knows now?
Yeah.
And I do think that the way that they used the other three actors did work, and it wasn't completely distracting. I disliked Colin Farrell's character completely. Well, I mean, they're all the same character, but I disliked
his... I think you're supposed to dislike him, though.
Yeah, I just felt the way that they ended with this entire character was like, oh, okay, and now we just go off into this other world. And I mean, I liked the initial way that it ended, but not with his character. They just kind of left him hanging there.
Gotcha.
Okay, I guess I will move on to what I watched this week. Goodness. I was talking about I was going to probably stop watching movies after the film fest because, yeah, you know, I'm getting on overload. No, I watched like 3-4 movies this week. Watched The Great Escape. I love that movie.
Excellent choice, man.
Steve McQueen is so good in that.
He is BA all the way.
Yeah. And how am I missed? James Garner is awesome.
Yeah.
I love him in that movie. Oh. Then what else did I watch? Last night I watched our soon to be topic, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, because I just had, I hit a pawn shop.
Oh, I'm sorry. So that's going to be I thought you meant Bill and Ted's going to be our soon to be topic. Sweet, we're doing a Bill and Ted show.
That could be fun sometime.
We could.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We could. And now on both movies. I hit a pawn shop yesterday and picked up some screaming deals.
Go ahead and tell us your screaming deals.
Oh, man. Good night. I got The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
One of the best. Love that film.
Red Eye, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and the 3-disc Battle Royale for $20.
Jeez, man. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Where did you get those again?
At a pawn shop.
Oh, you just said that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just the local ones.
Cheaper than
just
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Well, for that, I mean, most people pay $20 for Battle Royale.
Actually, it goes like $40.
Yeah, exactly, if not more.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So watch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I liked it better than I saw it the first time. The first time I saw it, I hated it. I thought it was a stupid movie. Well, having seen The Seventh Seal now, I liked it a lot more.
It's kind of ingenious. All this stuff in hell and heaven, I thought it was really clever.
When was the first time you saw it? A long time ago?
Oh, yeah, like when it first hit video.
Okay.
Yeah.
Way back when you were
in VHS days. Yeah, because...
Get off my lawn!
Because you know what I didn't like about it? I hate those stupid characters, the ones
Station.
That are, Station. I really hated Station, but I love everything else about the movie.
Yeah, yeah, it's just so stupid.
What do you think? Do you think it's better than the first one, though? Or?
Oh, man.
So I think it's a little smarter than the first one.
It's a little smarter, but the first one's more fun.
You're probably right about that. Yeah, and then you got like, you know, you can't beat Abe Lincoln giving the speech at the high school at the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, when they start talking, giving their speech and introducing their band.
Right.
It just...
Party on, dudes!
No, I'm talking about in Bogus Journey when they battle the bands. That just got... It got painful.
And Will Sadler is awesome. Awesome.
He plays two roles.
That's right. Who else is he?
He plays like one of the dad of the British...
That's right. Yeah, you only see him for like a second. That's right. I forgot about that. I was
like, who is that? And I figured it out. Yeah. And then this morning I watched Battle Royale, which, you know, when the first time I saw it, we were at Starfest, and part of a sci-fi convention and finishing is hitting the bootleg table. And I think the guy gave you a bootleg of it.
He did, yeah, because I bought, I think, like two. So he's like, here, you can get one for free.
And he like gave it to me, and it was some of the worst subtitles ever. Aww. I still liked it.
What was wrong with the subtitles? It just didn't make any sense?
It didn't make any sense. None at all.
Was it like Asian guy yelling or just what was it?
Your base article all belonged to us. I don't know. It was just really a lot of it just didn't make sense when you put it together. This time there were like some grammatical issues, but you could still get the point across. And I really, really enjoyed this film.
Good. Yeah it's a great satire. It's weird because it's an awesome balls to the wall action movie, but it's a really good satire about the Japanese educational system.
Yeah, and there's no way. I understand even more now why this movie will never make it over.
Never. The scene of my favorite action scene, you know, I don't really, it's that you shouldn't look at it as an action movie because it's kind of sick, but yeah, I gotta say, the scene in the breakfast table with the girls, that scene, remember where she gets on the table and she just like, that scene, I love that scene because it's a parody of like these, like, it's almost like what would happen at a Twilight convention if one of them got a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just
it's a chick gunfight. Right, but but Japanese schoolgirls who never touched a gun before.
Yeah, it's a spectacular scene. It really is.
It can't end well, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's such a good movie. I might have to let you borrow that because it's region free.
It's
region
pretty
zero.
Sweet, I got to say.
It's a jacked up movie. You've seen this, right, Ethan?
No.
Oh.
Oh.
We have to remedy that.
Yeah, remedy very soon. Yeah, I think you'd like it. It's a great film. It may not deserve theatrical release in America, and I understand that, and I do respect that, but I think it does deserve to be seen.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite the end-all be-all that a lot of people make it out to be.
No.
But it's definitely a fascinating film.
It is one of the great, like, hey, you haven't seen this here? Take a look. It's one of those, like, great under-the-table movies to recommend to friends, but it's not the kind of film, like, everybody needs to see this, because no.
This is the one that your creepy yet cool uncle passes you under the table. Here, watch this after your folks go to bed.
That's funny. Yeah. For me, that was Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I understand what you're saying. So,
fair enough. And I think that's about it. So let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this weekend, because we're like a half hour in.
All right. In theaters, opening wider, Wes Anderson's Fantastic, The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Rain is Ninja Assassin. Sho Kasuji is in this, by the way. One of the great ninja stars of the 80s. He was a ninja, Ninja 3, The Domination. Yeah, Sho Kasuji. Old Dogs with Robin Williams and John Travolta.
This is getting some brutal reviews.
Bernie Mac is in that too.
That's right. The late Bernie Mac has a scene.
Well, did you hear about what they had to do? I think he died during production. They had to get Jude Law, Colin Farrell, and Johnny Depp to play his character.
Ouch. Well done, sir.
Very well done. And also opening, I don't know why, and I guess I could talk about this movie now, The Road. In limited release, you have Richard Linklater's Me and Orson Welles, starring Zac Efron and Claire Danes, if it is very good. In very extremely limited release, opening wide everywhere soon, Disney's The Princess and the Frog. And finally, Robin Wright Penn. She's Robin Wright now. She's had the pen removed since she's been divorced. Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder in The Private Lives of Pippa Lee.
So, do you want to talk about The Road first, then I'll let you and Ethan talk about Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Is it in Denver? Do you know? Can I talk about it?
I don't know. Is it just a limited release?
It's in Winnipeg, so...
Oh, okay. Well...
I think it means you're
do you want me to check real quick?
Do you mind? I'm sorry.
No, hang on.
I want to make sure...
Yeah, it's playing at the mine. We're good.
Okay. We're recording here.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't like this film. Surprise. Viggo Mortensen is excellent in this movie. It's an impressive performance. He is asked to do some scenes that are extremely difficult and very painful. And if he gets an Oscar nomination for this film, I think it's definitely deserved. The film, the tone is all over the place. It goes from being, you know, this neo-noir Western to being this post-apocalyptic thriller to this father and son journey to being a hardcore horror film to being an action film to being a suspense film to being kind of a whimsical kind of film. It's all over the place. That's one problem I have with it. The other problem is just it's so incredibly depressing, not even on a level that is helpful. The movie offers no hope to the effect that why are we even watching this? Because no matter what, because, you know, it's Viggo and his son going across this desolate landscape looking for signs of life, the world is over. So, I mean, they can't possibly find anything good. So you're watching these two people for 2 hours essentially get worse and worse and worse with their situation. Like I told you, Dave, like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, there's a scene where Viggo Mortensen and Charlize Theron are talking about their son and the state of the world. The world is like at its very end. And Charlize Theron, if I could paraphrase as much as possible, she says, you need to kill us. You need to shoot us. Our neighbors have already done that. You know, why don't we just all shoot each other, just die as a family? And then she tells him, well, you know, you need to do something because if they get in here, they're going to rape me and they're going to rape our son and kill him. That's in the first 10 minutes of this feel-good movie. And it's just, the whole movie is like that. It's just, it makes you feel like crap. It offers no hope. And it offers this, you know, the absolute worst possible idea of humanity. You've got Robert Duvall and Guy Pearce making cameos in the movie, but they're really not in the movie long enough to make much of an impression. And when it was over, I couldn't wait to get out in the theater. I could, you know, a movie like this made me want to go see Old Dogs.
Barry, I'm guessing you have not read the book?
I've not read the book, no. I love Cormac McCarthy, though.
I have read the book, and hope was actually kind of a theme in the book, so I'm guessing it just was not properly translated.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I've read his Blood Meridian, which was extremely grotesque and some say unfilmable, but I think it's a terrific, terrific, crazy neo-noir Western, whatever, for whatever that's worth. But no, I honestly have not read the book, which I know is supposed to be like one of the best books of the last 20 years. But yeah, this movie just didn't do it for me. And I saw it with a critic, a very well-known Colorado critic who had read the book. And he says, you know, the book is poetry. The movie is not poetry.
Ben Lyons?
Nope.
Not Ben Lomas. Okay, so I was flipping around on the TV, and he's like doing stuff for like E Network now.
Mm.
Well, I think he always had been there, but he just did at the movies as like a side thing.
Okay. I just saw him pop up talking to the people from New Moon. I'm like, wow, let me throw up now. Change the channel.
Yeah.
New Moon.
That's where he belongs.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let you and Ethan talk about The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, I freaking love this movie, Ethan. Did you?
I adored it.
Well, that was quick. All right, then.
Moving on.
Okay, I thought you were going to go next, because you're kind of the articulate one, and I'm kind of just the guy who does the dick jokes. But, I think this is just a very, not just it's very funny and very cool and quirky, but I think it's honestly a very well-structured screenplay. It has very well-developed characters, and it's, and I think we were talking earlier, you were talking about Darjeeling Limited, where Wes Anderson's style was kind of getting tired, but I think he definitely kind of needed this area, this medium of animation, to kind of satisfy all his whims and quirks and ideas, but not make it kind of settle into self-parody. And yeah, I just think this totally suited it, and it was awesome. And another thing is, I was just thinking about after the movie how there's a lot of stuff in this that you'd almost kind of seen like a DreamWorks animation movie, where it's like the possum, you know, has like a credit card and they're using phones and stuff.
Yeah.
But in this, it actually works. Like it totally feels like natural and organic to the script. Like there is that joke that like that they're using phones, that a possum uses a credit card, but it still like works as like a legitimate part of the story, I felt.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I thought all of the characters were so endearing. After a while, I stopped noticing the animation. I just love these adorable, fuzzy, hilarious characters. This movie is so freaking funny. I think it may be the funniest movie I've seen all year. Like, I found myself laughing harder at it than anything else I've seen. I mean, probably one of my favorite moments in the movie, probably the moment where I knew I loved this film, was early on where George Clooney is having breakfast with Mrs. Fox, and he's like, you know, I can't believe they don't like think we're civilized or anything, and he takes his toast and he's like, but then he like very daintily sips his tea. Like, this is great. Yeah. This is so smart. And when Jason Schwartzman and his character is introduced like wearing nothing but underoos, like, this is a really funny movie. It's a really funny comment on itself. It's a great adaptation of this story. It's like, I thought, not only honoring to what Roald Dahl wrote, but just to, I mean, this is just one of these movies where I fell in love with the characters, and you know, I can't say I felt that way about Monsters vs. Aliens or a lot of the children's movies I've seen this year.
And I will say, anytime Willem Dafoe's rat was on screen, I was an incredibly happy person. I'll just say that.
That was awesome. Yeah, perfect casting. You know, what's funny was I was reading that apparently Adrian Brody is in the movie as a field mouse.
Yeah, I noticed
Isn't
him, actually.
Crazy?
Well, it's, that scene where he's, like, giving them all assignments to do and stuff. He's, like, saying their Latin names. And I remember he's, like, the one who says, I want to do something, too. He has, like, one line, so.
Yeah. and apparently Bill Murray is the voice of the wolf at the end. And I love that scene with the wolf. It was so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just saying, and the possum, Kylie, he was voiced by Wally Wolodarski, who's like a writer on The Simpsons. I thought that was kind of cool casting.
Yeah, it was great. Like, after a while, like, I just thought, you know, Clooney's voice, I just thought really good for this character. Everybody, like, it wasn't one of these things where Bill Murray or Meryl Streep took over. I felt they really served the characters. I mean, I think this is one of the best films of the year. I really do.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Right on. Cool. Well, then let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting DVD this coming Tuesday.
This Tuesday, we got The Return of John Connor, which apparently Dave and I, maybe four of the people in the world, liked. Terminator Salvation, McTerminator. A movie I couldn't have hated more, although it has a lot of fans. A Night at the Museum, Battle at the Smithsonian. Take away Amy Adams, you have a terrible movie. I think this is animated. Terminator Salvation, the Machinima series.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mental, Season 1. I didn't know there was a Mental series. Ben 10, Alien Swarm. I don't know what that is either. Moving on. Paper Heart, which apparently started off as a documentary and became a comedy. This is with Michael Cera and Charlene Yee. I've heard good things about that. Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels available on Blu-ray. And that's about it.
Okay, we got one other thing to throw in there, and that would be the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Volume 16. There is a limited edition of this that comes with a little Tom Servo figure. Yeah. But the movies this time around are The Corpse Vanishes, Warrior of the Lost World, Santa Claus, and Night of the Blood Beast.
Santa Claus.
It's not Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. It's another Santa Claus movie of some sort. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm watching some zombie movie. Oh, Zombie Nightmare. Oh, it is so god awful. It's on Netflix. Watch instantly. And it's got Tia Carrera in it.
That's the one. Yes. That's their first movie. I've always wanted to see that just because she's in it.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh, it gloriously
and
it's awful.
Mystery Science Theater?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Maybe we'll have to do that at some point. Then.
Yeah, I'd love to. Man, that's awesome.
It's still sitting in the queue. So, yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. Well, heck, let's move on to some news. I don't think we have much because it was a slow news week. Anytime you have Charlton Copley's birthday cake popping up. News.
We'll go ahead and start off with that then.
Well, no, that's that's
let's
all
get into a 20-minute discussion of that.
No, I'm good. That's all there was to that, really, for me. Next,
I as a kid who grew up thinking Van Damme was pretty cool until I, you know, spartaned up a few years later. I gotta say, the trailer for Universal Soldier Regeneration, it looks clunky and junky, but I can't wait to see it. Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren are back as the Universal Soldiers, and it looks like a 100% improvement over Universal Soldier The Return.
Oh, so Bill Goldberg isn't in it?
No, Goldberg, no. Oh. No, it looks much, much better. In fact, I don't know if it looks even as good as the first one, but, you know, February 2nd, I will get this. I want to see this thing.
Fair enough. Ethan?
Oh boy, I'm on the spot here.
I know we've each got like one or two stories, so yeah. Do you want me to go?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Wow. The only thing that I had this week is the fact that, I already brought up the Still Bill thing, it winning the audience award.
Yay.
But Quint over Ain't It Cool yearly does a geek bot gift guide. And it's always incredible amounts of fun. There's always crazy stuff. And I will put it in the show notes because there's three parts and they're all worth reading through. I want the Space Invaders ice cube tray. Because if you had Space Invaders in your Coke, dude, it's all good.
That's pretty awesome.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of really cool stuff. Some of it, there's one thing that looks like, remember, did you play arcade games much as a kid?
Of course.
Remember the Afterburner simulator?
Yes.
Like you could get in it and move around and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
They have a work desk that looks like that almost. It's got three monitors. Oh, it's like 45 grand, but oh, it looks tight.
That'd be fun.
Yes. Yeah. I geeked myself watching, reading that through. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I wasn't in the room then.
Yeah. You geeked yourself. No one was in the room, actually.
It's okay. Melissa and I ducked.
Oh. All right, Ethan, back on you.
Oh boy! The trailer for Noah Baumbach's new movie Greenberg came out. This is, of course, starring Ben Stiller. I'm guessing nobody else saw this trailer.
I didn't, but I've heard about it. No, I heard it was a really promising looking trailer.
Well, if you go to ethanvest.tumblr.com, you can see it. Just saying, I got the exclusive.
There it is.
Nice subtlety there.
Well, and you've been posting on there for a while too.
Yeah.
Product placement.
That's okay. So, if we're not allowed to pimp our own stuff, what are we
absolutely
allowed to pimp?
Yeah. So it's ethanvest at tumblr.com.
Ethanvest.tumblr.com.
.tumblr.com. Okay.
Is that it, sir?
Well, I thought it was a good trailer, but I guess there's Jeremy Renner, star of The Hurt Locker, is in talks to be Hawkeye in both Thor and The Avengers. Dave, now I know you're the comic book guy, so maybe you could shed some light on Hawkeye.
Hawkeye just needs to be a smart-ass archer. That's really about it.
Did you see Hurt Locker yet?
I have not. I need to.
That's at the Dollar Theater now.
Is it?
It is.
Dang.
We should just spend a whole day there.
Everything you want to see is at the Dollar Theater. Invention of Lying is there, too. Ricky Gervais. Eh?
Oh,
see?
Okay. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. I don't see why he couldn't do well. Hawkeye's not one of those guys that's like has to be like this super perfectly cast character. I think you can get, a lot of actors could probably pull him off. Probably,
okay.
Yeah. Smart Alec and an archer. Yay!
What distinguishes him from Green Arrow?
Green Arrow's rich and wears green.
Oh, creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I Green Arrow is probably okay. So you remember you asked me this question, Ethan. Green Arrow is a lot more fleshed out character, I think. Just in that they went as far as to establish Green Arrow's political association. Like he's a lefty liberal. His words, because he always teamed up, they teamed him up in the 70s with Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, who was the exact opposite. And having them play off each other made for really interesting stories.
Hmm.
So I've always found Green Arrow more interesting, personally.
Cool.
I never really followed the Avengers. I couldn't have cared less. Yeah. I was an X-Men kid.
I only have Avengers issues because there are Secret Wars 2 issues that are, you know, that are printed in the Avengers. So there you go. There's my comic book geekery right there.
Have you got anything else, Barry?
Just one more. I just thought that was interesting. Opening January 1st, 2010. So the first one out for 2010 is a film called Case 39. This is a horror film starring Renee Zellweger and Bradley Cooper. It is about a caseworker, hence the title, played by Renee Zellweger, who takes in this young girl who comes from an abusive family. But it turns out, oh, the young girl may have something to do with it. This film was made back in 2006.
So this is it's going to be next year's One Missed Call.
Well, One Missed Call, I mean, at least it was like 2 years. This is like four. It was made 4 years ago. It's been sitting on the shelf.
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not like Apocalypse Now, and it just took 3 years to make an edit?
Well, maybe. I don't know. You know, it could go either way. Bradley Cooper did this back to back with Midnight Meat Train. This is back when he was trying to be a horror movie actor. You know, when I guess that didn't pan out. But this is from the director Pandorum, and I should say this is the first movie that director did. Then he went and made Pandorum, which has since been released. I mean, that's how long this has been on the shelf.
Dang.
Isn't that something? Yeah, so we finally get to see Case 39, January 1st, 2010.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't know if it's worth the wait or not, but I got to say, I'm curious. I am.
All right, fair enough. Have you got anything else, Ethan?
No.
It's okay. We're 45 minutes in the episode, so that's perfectly fine. We have a new commercial to play. Christopher over at JoJo.net put some together, so I'm going to go ahead and kick it on over to him. Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. Great show. At Jonja.net, that's JONJA, we have everything to satisfy your sci-fi fan needs. If you look to start comparing... What do you mean there's no video? They're screen geeks. They don't have a screen? Well, how am I supposed to... I hired a Cylon to tell everyone about the discussions of sci-fi television movies past and present. I guess I won't be needing you. You can leave.
By your command.
Come on, I had Nichelle Nichols beam in to talk about our long list of exclusive interviews, including Zachary Quinto, Amanda Tapping, and the crew of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Hailing frequencies are always open at JeanJay.net.
Never mind, Miss Nichols. Thanks for coming in. I don't believe this. Oh, great. Now here comes my special guest to tell people about JeanJay.net's Flash Arcade. Forget it, man. They can't even see you. Oh, well. Maybe everyone will find their way over to JoJo.net to see and hear everything for themselves. Thanks for listening. Now back to Screen Geeks.
And we're back to finally finish our series on Wes Craven, filmmaker. You know, a few weeks ago we were talking about A Vampire in Brooklyn and how after Vampire in Brooklyn that he did Scream, because after the box office audience disaster of Vampire in Brooklyn, he needed Scream, which was a box office hit that completely rejuvenated his career. Well, the same thing happened for Red Eye. Thank God for Red Eye, because Red Eye followed up a Cursed film he did called Cursed. Cursed, I'll say very briefly.
I forgot he even made that.
Yeah, and I do need to talk about it for just a minute. Cursed came out in 2005, a few months prior to Red Eye. Cursed had been shot twice. Cursed is a film he'd worked on for 2 years. They completely reshot the film a second time. The first version of the movie had Skeet Ulrich from Scream and Corey Feldman in the cast. Jesse Eisenberg was originally cast as Christina Ricci's boyfriend. In the reshot version of the movie, he's Christina Ricci's younger brother. Cursed was a movie that had to be reworked. It's not something they talk about a lot as to just how much they had to rework the film. Apparently, I don't know if Craven himself imposed it or if Harvey Weinstein and Bob Weinstein, the Miramax brothers, stepped in and said, no, you're doing it wrong. But Cursed was such a troubled film. It had a really healthy campaign. I thought it would at least open up at number one. Cursed was – that movie is so freaking screwed. It opened up against Diary of a Mad Black Woman and got its butt kicked. Tyler Perry destroyed Wes Craven. And, you know, right there, you know something's wrong. But thankfully – what happened to Red Eye before we actually talk about the movie. Red Eye, everything went right. Red Eye was extremely low budget. It was shot very quickly. It was shot with, at the time, a no-name cast other than Brian Cox. It came out at the very end of summer, which is usually not a good sign. That's usually like the burial ground for movies. But, you know, the film starred Cillian Murphy, whose Batman Begins opened just 2 months prior, and Rachel McAdams, who whose Wedding Crashers just opened the month before Red Eye opened up. So the timing for this movie was so perfect, and those movies were such hits that people wanted to see the next movies that Murphy and McAdams had done. And the reviews for Red Eye were the best that Craven had gotten since the first Scream. So everything for this movie was just completely in sync for the film. And let's just talk about the film.
I loved it.
Good.
It's totally Craven's Hitchcock film. Or Twilight Zone episode. I think it's more of a Hitchcock film because, as opposed to the supernatural elements that you could even argue are in a Scream movie, this one's firmly planted in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And and the fact that he pulled it off so well, I think, really speaks as a testament to Craven's talent as a filmmaker.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really glad that we chose this as our last one, because I saw this when it came out in theaters. I hadn't seen it since. And I was kind of like, you know, I never felt like this was like a Wes Craven film. Like, I just didn't see his directorship in it, but seeing it this morning, I was like, oh yeah, I can just like feel it.
Yeah.
So
Ethan?
Yeah. I hadn't seen it since it came out in the theater, and I had better things to do than rewatch it, so I didn't. But I can talk about seeing it in the theater. Like,
dang.
I remember eating New York fries while watching it. Do they have that in the United States? New York fries?
That chain? In New York.
What is that like?
It's just a chain that sells fries, just fries.
Oh no, no, we don't. No. What else about the experience do you remember?
Well, I think they played like a Skittles ad before the movie.
Wasn't a Fanta commercial?
Well, no, wait. I remember I saw it in Calgary because my family was on vacation.
Oh, wow.
We're getting somewhere.
Interesting.
Anything about the actual movie or not so much?
Brian Cox was in it, right?
He was. He played the father.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Well, I'll just jump in and totally agree with you, Dave. Although I will say that I think, you know, it's a three-act movie. You've got the setup, and then you've got the sequence on the plane, and then you've got the third act. And I'll tread about this very carefully, and I'll let you guys decide, but I would almost not want to talk about the plot, because if anybody has not seen this movie, has not seen the trailer, has not, you know, if you go in this movie blind, you might think you're in for romantic comedy for the first 40 minutes.
Absolutely. I mean, even the back of the DVD, I'm so thankful that it didn't, you know, go the Hancock route.
They don't totally give it away. The trailer gives it away. The trailer does, which to its shame, because the movie really can have you fooled. All they needed to do is imply that something bad was going to happen on the airplane. But the trailer, to its shame, gives away the whole setup, which sucks, because the beginning is so deceitful. And yeah, there really is romantic.
It's almost like an audition level of deceit.
Yeah, really, because there really is romantic chemistry between the two protagonists. And they really make you think this movie is going to be like When Harry Met Sally on a plane, you know?
Yeah.
I agree completely, because having already seen it and knowing how it ends, you can see all the foreshadowing in the first, whatever, is it 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really liked, what's his name?
Cillian Murphy,
Oh my gosh, like he was so likable, and then, yeah, just like a switch, it just changes. And I guess, if you don't want to give away the ending, though, but I guess the thing I probably liked most about the movie was how Rachel McAdams, or Lisa's character, just... She turns around and just becomes a badass.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a really great thing about how they established that she was attacked, and it was a similarly abusive thing, and she didn't, you know, and she was the victim. But in this case, she takes charge of the situation, and how she does.
In that scene on the plane where the scene on the plane where she says, you know, yeah, I've thought about this a lot. And he says, yeah, you know, how it was completely out of your control. And she said, no, how I would never let this happen to me again.
I knew it was coming. I'm like, oh.
That's just like the punchline of the ending.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I loved it.
I wish Wes Craven would have made Snakes on a Plane. Sorry.
I was there. Might have made it a little better. I think what makes it recognizably a horror movie is not only do you have the killer in the house climax, but the villain himself is, you know, you do have like that deformity. You know, Freddy Krueger is, you know, physically deformed. This character is also deformed in a sense, you know.
Yeah, and that's a very creepy element. I mean, the very last part of the movie where they're on the stairs and he's trying to say something to her and he's walking down the stairs and she's like crawling after and he can't even say anything because his throat's all messed up.
Sorry. Quit spoiling stuff, silly.
But you don't know how.
That's right. That's right. Yes. I think the movie,
tension on the plane.
I think the film peaks on the plane. I do. Yeah. The ending works and it's very well done. But for me, we've seen that stuff before.
It almost goes True Lies. I don't know why, but it kind of reminds me.
It does. It becomes an action movie in a sense. Yeah. It really does. But all the stuff on the plane is brilliant because they're so good. This is an actor's movie first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I would go so far. I mean, yes, he was great in 28 Days Later, the one that shakes the barley. But I think this is the best thing he's done. I think this is the best thing McAdams has done. Mm-hmm. They are so. This is such a master class of acting that they do as a two-header for this film. The tension is there, the use of close-up. I mean, the whole thing is an airplane set, but like they make that plane look so menacing, and it's such a perfect setting for this movie.
And the way you think people are going to be disposed of might or might not happen. Right. I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's only really three settings for this whole entire movie. Mm-hmm. The airport, the plane, and then her house. And that's the thing, is there's so little, there's only a few characters, and the two of them are obviously take up the majority of the film, and the rest are just whatever. I think there's only four characters with actual names in the whole movie, and her dad, and then her Cynthia, her assistant at the hotel.
Yeah.
And so just because it's so focused on them, just everything else just kind of fades away, and you don't need that, because you can tell that it's low budget. I mean, the plane was nothing impressive and all that, but it just works so well that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't need a huge budget.
Yeah.
No.
I think the budget really played into its strengths, I think. It made you concentrate on the character piece that it is. Like you were saying, it's an actor's movie for sure. Because if either of them didn't bring their A game, that movie would have been awful.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was an interview with Craven in Fangoria talking about Cursed, and he was talking about the hell that he had making Cursed. But he was saying that, I just did this really small movie, and he said it was like one of the most fun things I ever did. It was totally low budget. I don't know when it's coming out. But he says, like, it's called Red Eye, and I think it's one of the best things I've done. I think you really feel his love for the genre in this movie. This is, you know, there's a lot of ways this really could have gone wrong. But everything for this movie really comes together.
There's not a gratuitous scene in the movie, whether it be dialogue or violence or anything. Everything in that movie is there for a reason.
It's a good, it's like, it's a PG-13, but that's almost a stretch because it's more psychologically intense than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I'm with Melissa. I'm really glad that we ended the series on this, as opposed to, you know, Vampire in Brooklyn.
Well, I'm glad this is the last thing he's done to date. I think it's great that, you know, we can look at something and see he can do more than just slasher films. You know, because he did a film in between, what was it? He did a film in 1999, so it's in between Scream 2 and 3 called Music of the Heart. Did you guys ever hear of that?
I heard of it. I never saw it.
Meryl Streep, who else? Gloria Estefan in her one acting role, and Angela Bassett. It's one of those Teacher in the Hood movies, and it's based on a true story. It's about this New Jersey teacher who bought 50 violins and donated to a school.
I've seen that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and it's very sweet. It's very predictable and it's completely forgettable. But, you know, that was supposed to be like his Oscar film and it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I think this is a better example of, look at this guy can do so much more than, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street 12 or Scream 4. So,
yes. Yeah. Yes. Did you want to chime in with anything about it, Ethan?
You know, I said Skittles commercial. Now that I think about it, I think it was a beer commercial. Do they still like even show beer commercials before movies? Like, isn't it kind of.
Not here.
Taboo.
Not in America.
Here in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't had beer or like cigarette commercials since like the 80s.
They don't even have cigarette commercials, do they?
I think the last ones they did were Joe Camel. Do you remember those?
Like back in the 80s,
yeah. Like it was an animated Joe Camel. Like, hey, kids. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But Joe Camel.
So do you want to say anything actually about the movie or not so much?
I remember thinking it was okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Cool. All right, well, I guess we can wrap that up then.
We certainly
is there anything else you want to say about Mr. Craven at all? Or?
Well, his first new movie is coming out next year. It's supposed to come out this year. The original title was 25-8, which was a date. It's a serial killer movie set in a high school, so he's going back to Scream. A no-name cast, completely unknown. And the title, I understand, is now called My Soul to Take.
Okay.
And I think it's opening up in the springtime. So
okay. Very cool.
Well, I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, next week we are taking a break from our director series. I have no idea what director we're even doing next.
We did have a suggestion from a caller.
Oh, we've had several suggestions.
Yeah,
yes.
We've had
requests for John Carpenter, Ridley Scott, and yes, we have one here as well. But next week we're going to be talking about the Joss Whedon great classic show Firefly.
Yay!
So the
special Firefly episode. I think we've been promising this for a while.
I know. Well, we've been promising our wives to this.
So, yes.
So both our wives are going to be showing up. Stephanie and Julia will be both showing up.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yes, it'll be a good time. And let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this weekend.
A bunch of movies that are not going to play for more than a week, so see them if you want to, because these movies are going to be in and out of theaters quite fast. Starting off with Armored. I feel like I've been seeing the trailer for this since April.
Armored. This looks so stupid.
It's a completely disposable heist movie with, who's in it? Matt Dillon is, I don't even know who's in it.
Anything that makes you think, wow, SWAT was such a better movie than this?
it looks like it's the kind of movie you watch on a plane because there's nothing else to do. A movie that, you know, Jim Sheridan directed it. He's director of My Left Foot and in the Name of the Father. Excellent director. This trailer just doesn't do it for me, even though it has my favorite U2 song in it, Brothers, with Jake Gyllenhaal, Tobey Maguire, and Natalie Portman. I feel like the trailer sums up the whole movie. Have you seen this trailer yet?
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see it, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just because of the concept. I'm interested in the idea, but...
Well, it's a remake.
Is it?
Yeah, of a Danish movie, Brødre.
Okay.
So,
All right.
So I should mention that.
Cool.
Appreciate that.
That's good to know. Everything's speaking of remakes, in limited release, although I understood it was getting a wide release, so I don't know what's going on. In limited release, the Robert De Niro film, Everybody's Fine, that is a remake of a Giuseppe Tottori film.
Which you can't talk about yet.
Can't talk about it quite
yet. But we're going to be posting an interview this week with...
Kirk Jones, the director of the film.
Who also directed Waking the Divine.
I thought you were going to say De Niro.
Yeah, it's like extras. We're going to tease De Niro out. Yeah.
Yes, the film also stars Sam Rockwell, Drew Barrymore, and Kate Beckinsale, and that's in limited release on December the 4th. Up in the Air, as we've already talked about, in limited release. Serious Moonlight, which sounds like serious crap. This is Meg Ryan and Timothy Hutton, two actors I really like. She ties her husband to a chair and forces a confession out of him. That's the movie.
Meg Ryan, what happened to her?
I know. That's an excellent question.
Three words in the cut.
You know, I didn't think that movie was as bad as Against the Ropes. You remember that? She did a boxing movie with Omar Epps. That was crap. In the cut, I don't know. I defend that movie.
That was the turning point, though, I think.
You're right. It's an interesting movie, though. And then finally, crap title in theaters, Transylvania. Transylvania, about a bunch of horny, drunk college kids who go to Transylvania and discover that Dracula is real.
Is he played by Leslie Nielsen?
You know, it would help if we were played by Robert Pattinson even, but no.
Is he played by Andy Garcia?
Wow.
It looks like garbage. It really does. This is like, looks like a Fox Atomic kind of level.
Ooh.
Yeah, like really bad, like really cheap, really lame. Yeah, be lucky to make $1 million.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's that.
All right, and then what's it in DVD next week?
DVD is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, available on regular and Blu-ray.
In a myriad of different gift sets a number of different multiple editions. Discs.
Yeah, we like this movie. Didn't we all like this film?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did you see
Harry Potter?
Yeah, the Half-Blood Prince.
I hated it.
Really? Oh. We need to discuss this.
Wow, yes, yes.
The last one that just came out this summer. Oh, my God, it was... I mean, none of you have read the books.
No, okay. No.
I have.
Ethan has.
Well, did you see this, Ethan?
I remember we had a big discussion about it in July, so I don't feel like...
And I didn't talk about this?
No, I don't think you did.
You did. We did. I guess that's all such a blur.
I don't remember either, but no, it was a complete misinterpretation of the book, and it's all based... The movie is all based on these corny romantic jokes and the romances between the characters, which it's basically just saying, haha, this is going to be all serious someday when we get to the next two movies, when really the sixth book was very dark and they did not go in depth to that.
Hmm.
So, no, it was... And the last sequence with Dumbledore and the ending, I think they either changed some parts or it just wasn't... It was not right. No. And then the whole part where the Weasley's house catches on fire, mm-hmm. that doesn't even happen in the book. So, yeah. I don't know.
Okay, man. But aside from the fact that it's a bastardization of the book, you didn't think it was any good?
No.
No? No?
No.
Okay.
I understand that. That's why I haven't read any of the books. I'm purposely not reading the books until after the final movie comes out. Then I might go back and read them.
Okay.
You will regret that decision.
All right, what else have we got coming out?
My favorite movie of the year so far. I'll just put it out there. I love this film. Michael Mann's Public Enemies with Johnny Depp, Marion Cotillard, and Christian Bale, available on regular 2-disc special edition and Blu-ray 2-disc. Another great movie. And I got to say, this is a great film. I'm a real surprise. Nora Ephron's Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep and Amy Adams, also available on regular and Blu-ray disc. Lost Season 5. Rescue Me Season 5 Volume 2. And then here we go. The Potter Attack begins. On Blu-ray and regular, you have Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone Ultimate Edition, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets Ultimate Edition, and Harry Potter Years 1 through 6 The Gift Set, available on full screen and widescreen.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right. What else have we got?
That's it for me.
Okay. I've got one thing that no one probably would ever consider even spending this kind of money on, but we have AK-100. 25 films of Akira Kurosawa from the Criterion Collection.
Wow.
The list price is only $400. But if you buy it on Amazon, it's only $285. The interesting thing is there are four films on here that have never been released on DVD ever. But it's a pretty comprehensive collection of his films. It's, yeah, there's a lot.
Does it list the ones that have never been released? Is Matadayo one of those? Or
is which one?
Matadayo?
Yes.
I love that film. That's the last film he ever did.
Really?
Love Matadayo.
1993, yeah.
Yeah, love that film. It's about a teacher who loses his cat, and his students try to find his cat for him because this man loves his cat so much. And Matadayo means not yet. In other words, I'm not dead yet. And it's about an old man. I was just going to say, it's about an old man dealing with his mortality, and I think it's a beautiful, beautiful film. I love this. This is one of the smaller films he's done.
Cool.
I was going to say, I thought Dreams was his last movie.
Nope. This actually came out after Dreams. This had a much smaller release, but I think Dreams is the one that most people remember. And, you know, and no question, Dreams is, I think, more what we expect from Kurosawa. It's big, it's beautiful, it's vast in its landscapes.
Cool. Right on. So we do have some voicemail. That's some very cool news. We love getting voicemail.
Hey.
I'm not going to say who it is because I hate when people say who it is and then say, hey, this is so-and-so. So I'm going to try to quit doing that so much. And we'll just play the daggum voicemail.
Hey, Screen Geeks. This is Jalen Johnson. Just had a couple of questions. The first one for Dave. Just looking at past episodes, I've noticed that you don't particularly like Michael Keaton as Batman. And considering that he's my favorite, I just always wondered why, particularly. And the second question is for Barry. I recently looked at both the Mad Max movies, and I like them a lot. But I'm just wondering, do you recommend Beyond Thunderdome? And one more thing. Since I don't have a Facebook, I just thought I'd recommend David Cronenberg for your next director. But anyway, thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the voicemail, Jalen. Michael Keaton.
Oh, no. Here we go.
No.
Gonna be hating on the Burton film.
No. I think this is a personal opinion, very much so. But I think that of the first three Batman, you had an actor being cast who could play either Bruce Wayne or Batman well. In Clooney's case, I think it was kind of not so great of either. But I think that Michael Keaton actually did very good portraying the Bruce Wayne side of Batman. I just could never take him seriously as Batman. He's like, I'm Batman. I'm like, really?
Really, I think it's the other way around for me. I think he was a great Batman, but his problem was he played Bruce Wayne as Batman too. And like Clooney played Batman as Bruce Wayne. And
yeah, Val Kilmer did an okay job as Batman. He just couldn't find where Bruce Wayne was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think as a character.
And he did have that scene where he had that big cheesy smile, which you know, which you should never have Batman do in the cowl, I think. But I kind of agree. I mean, for me, it's because I grew up with the Burton film. I love that film so much. But I always thought it was kind of suspicious that, you know, Michael Keaton is, you know, he's built kind of like I am, but like that suit was like so buff and muscular. So that was kind of suspicious.
It's kind of like the Flash muscle suit from the TV show.
I remember that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So muscle suit aside, I loved him as Batman and Bruce Wayne. But.
Yeah, that's just all I thought. And Beyond Thunderdome?
I love Thunderdome. I recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's no question. It is the most commercial of the bunch. It came out. It was released by Warner Brothers. It came out in 1985. I mean, it was, you know, if anything, people remember it for the Tina Turner song. And they remember Tina Turner being Thulsa Doom. But you know what? All the scenes in the Thunderdome are so awesome. They are such a crazy, imaginative, well-done, nutso sequence that are as good as any of the action sequences in Mad Max or Road Warrior. And you know, it was written and directed by George Miller. You got the same crew there. Definitely lower your expectations because it's not as like anything goes as the Road Warrior and Mad Max. But I think Thunderdome's a terrific movie. I do. I highly recommend it.
Cool. And we will be adding Cronenberg to the list, just not Crash.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like which Cronenberg films would go? What The Fly? Maybe Dead M Ringers. Butter. What's that?
Dead Ringers.
Dead. Yeah, absolutely. Dead Ringers.
If you can find it.
Well, I got it on VHS, but my VHS copy is, you know, 80s. Yeah, that's tough, because, like, which ones do we make ourselves watch? Because his stuff is, I love his stuff, but it's...
Videodrome is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I think that's worth watching.
Oh, God, that's so grotesque. I'd watch it again, but it's such a grotesque movie. God.
Yeah, I remember I owned it, the Criterion, at one point, and then I watched it, because I bought it blind.
Like, I want this in the house.
I don't know if I need to own this movie.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a great suggestion. I do.
Yeah. So thank you much, Jalen. We really appreciate the voicemail love. And if I could actually remember the stupid voicemail number, I had to pull it up.
Well, you should just be like Guy Pearce in Memento and like, you know, take your shirt off and tattoo it on yourself and stuff. That'd be.
Yeah, that entails me taking my shirt off and nobody wants that.
Well, I can't see it, so it doesn't...
That's right. This is all theater to the mind.
This is true. All right, if you would like to send us some email, by all means, you can hit us at podcast, Melissa, Ethan, Barry, or Dave at ScreenGeeks.com. We also have a Twitter page. It's twitter.com/ScreenGeeks, or Ethan Vez, or QueenB31 for Melissa, or Dexter Douglas for me. We also have a Facebook fan page. If you just do a search for Screen Geeks Radio, it'll come up. And we post some stuff up there early sometimes, you know, like when Dave forgets to put the last freaking episode in the RSS feed. So sorry about that, guys. But yes, next week we will be doing the Firefly Fun. A few shout outs. We've posted an interview with Jessica Oryk from Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo, which was a lot of fun to do. Mm-hmm. And we've got more interviews popping up this week.
And our voicemail number is...
Oh, thank you. Since I have it here. See, nice. I would have forgotten too. Our voicemail number is 719-553-5664. And until our brown coat Sunday that is next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
This is Melissa.
Take it easy.